there. I thought you were a man of taste. So are you doing your bit to help them out financially?
Hey, well, exactly. I think Stephen needs as much as he can get coming back into the club. He's given us enough. So if I can just go and get a shirt, then I'm very happy to do that to help them along the way.
Yeah, when we last spoke, although we've spoken in between, I think, a couple of times, when we last talked on the podcast, it was one of the very first ones we did. And at that time, I think it might even have been just before Lee Johnson left, but it was a funny old, I mean, it's been a funny old 15 months, 513 days it'll be when I walk in to see them against Aston Villa, was since the last time at Ashton Gate. But your thoughts on the tail end of Lee Johnson and Holden and then Pearson coming in, just a quick wrap on that.
Okay. Yeah, what I would say was that I think it was time for Lee to go. I think you look back on it now and say how pleased we should be with what he did, but there again there was a bit of an issue and there was a bit of a mess about where we were going forward. I think the difficulty is for us as fans is for me, the appointment of Dean Holden. I got nothing against Dean, and everyone in the business says what a nice guy he is. And he is. But I think the way that was handled, you do 5-6 weeks due diligence and then you end up with the number two was completely wrong. Now, you might look at it and say, well, actually, what he did at the beginning of the season actually kept us up, because when Nigel took over, it was a disaster and we couldn't win anything and we could have been in a relegation battle.
Yeah.
But I think it all stems from that appointment. And if there's any criticism of the board going backwards, it's in our appointments of manager, which is why I feel Nigel Pearson is absolutely the right choice.
And I think you said to me before we started recording, you've met Nigel. I mean, he's got a fearsome reputation, and his record since leaving Leicester City, it's fragmented at best. You know, I think it's 96 games. I just checked it, 30 games won, and his start at City's not been great. But I'm like you. I think he's the man. But tell us what you know about Nigel from your dealings with him.
Well, yeah, Nigel's an interesting character. I think we all know that. You only need to look at his interviews at the end of matches and you realise, you know, what sort of a character. He's a deep thinker. He is... He thinks in a different way, I think, to some people, but he's very keen on that core collective spirit. And he understands that team ethos, and that's what he will generate. And I think he's beginning to generate. Give him a bit of time. Yes, we've got to. But I think what the board has done in employing Nigel Pearson is almost giving him the remit to say, right, you reshape this. We've done this, we've done that, we've done it with young, we've done it with untried, we've had a go at some more experienced and it hasn't quite worked. So we are now entrusting in you, and I think it's a big ask, for you to actually, within 2 or 3 years, put us on the verge of the Premier League. And ultimately, Potts, I still think there's only one place up for grabs in the league. You know, the top two are more or less going to be those clubs that come down from the Premier League, and therefore you're looking at one more place. It's bloody hard to get out.
You're aiming for top six at best, and then you're in a little mini tournament against clubs that are always going to have more resources than you.
Correct. And look, we've had millions poured into us. They've had hundreds of millions poured into them. Mm. Nothing against Stephen. He's ploughed in every bit of cash that he thinks he's right, and thank goodness for him, and we should be grateful for that.
But if you look at losses and the ground improvements, it's not far short, and losses, ground improvements, team changes and what have you, it's not far short of a quarter of a billion, if it's not that, you know, which is a big number. How pivotal do you think it was? Because there have been some pivotal changes off the field, really. First of all, Mark Ashton, you know, he's come in for a lot of criticism. And if you look at fan talk and what have you, and just do a bit of digging around, you know, clearly I think his head was turned last summer. And, you know, I think he won the supporters award for the champagne moment of the season when he left. So Ashton's gone. He's taken Andy Rolls with him as well, up to Ipswich. Richard Gould's come in. You couldn't get two different characters to Mark Ashton and Richard Gould, could you?
Absolutely, because Richard will be behind the scenes, smoothing things over, making sure things The club runs smoothly, and the, you know, the wheels are all oiled, and he'll definitely be behind the scenes. Won't be taking any of the credit. And you know what Mark Ashton was like. He liked the limelight. He was very good at being in the public eye when things went right and when things weren't going wrong. And my big criticism of the club, and I've said it on numerous occasions, and indeed offered my services, is that communication between club and fans. And I think that's where the club really let the fans down last year. And I think they've started to re-engage this year. And I think that's really important. They've taken the message on board. Mm. They've listened, and things are beginning to be put right. And that'll obviously help with us being back in the ground.
Yeah. And one of the other key signings, again, off the field, was Dave Rennie, not to be confused with the former Balding midfielder.
I was expecting to see him turn up.
He's not. And equally that chief scout, Steve Walsh, who's been mooted, is not the Steve Walsh that used to play for Pierce, used to play for Leicester either. But if we look at this thing with City, with injuries, there was clearly something going wrong there, wasn't it? And in Rennie, that's probably the most pivotal thing that he's got, is a guy that he knows, he's known for 20 years.
I think there were extraordinary circumstances last year, and clearly something went slightly wrong. I think the pressure on sports scientists was intense and immense last year, because they'd never had to deal with such a, you know, rolling amount of football without any break. And we, you know, we as fans didn't know when the next game was coming along. So can you imagine what it was like as players and the pressure that puts you under? So clearly something did go wrong. I think unless, and I haven't seen any of the stats, and I haven't actually gone into the club to find out really what did go wrong there. You know, there used to be complaints at Arsenal. They were always picking up these injuries. At Spurs, when I was working up in London a lot, they were always getting injured, and you were, you know, questioning their training techniques and what was going on. So there can be issues at clubs where they are overdoing stuff. But I don't know the real reason, but I think we'll find out this year if everything is a bit better.
Yeah. Andy Rawls, I mean, he was at West Ham when I think Andy Carroll and others were, well, Andy Carroll's always injured. He had problems at West Ham, and he had problems at Arsenal. And it seems as though, and he happens to be in Mark Ashton's entourage, so hence him going up to Ipswich. But you're absolutely right. If we can get the players fitter, because, you know, there's clearly something being lacking there, hasn't there, from that perspective?
Yeah, and I think, look, Nigel is one for having a fit squad. Every manager wants a fit squad, but not just necessarily fit. It's a robust squad that survives. And I would say one thing, and we'll probably move on to this, Potts, that I'm slightly concerned by our intake, in that the injury difficulties that they have had as players, and whether that will impact our season when you bring in players that have had obviously injury difficulties throughout their career.
And you're talking there, we'll come on to it in a moment in a bit more detail, but you're talking there, Matty James, Andy King, and twilight of his career, almost the midnight of his career, Danny Simpson. I mean, he's got voices and presence in the dressing room, but we hope that it's not going to turn into another Chris Brunt situation. Well, I mean, one of the pivotal moments where we really seemed to be going downhill last season, just before Nigel arrived, was to do with the Famara Diju situation. You know, because we'd been knowing this time last year that we'd have 12 players out of contract in the summer. And then Ashton saying at that Sky game against Norwich, you know, yes, we've made him a good offer. And apparently he'd not offer the likes of Liam Walsh a contract, et cetera, et cetera. And then Pham didn't put in a display worthy of the name. And their most expensive player, he goes out the door for nothing. Do you think that was bad management? That, again, nothing to do with Steve Lansdowne, yeah, or John, because, okay, they appointed him. But it was just a cacophony of errors, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Well, you look at, you can't have 13 players out of contract in a, you know, at the end of one season. You can't have that amount of people. Go back 12 months. You can't have that amount of players in the last year of their contract, because that's half a squad disappearing. So something in the recruitment there has gone wrong. And you may want to get rid of 12, 13 players, which we have, but you can't be in that position when you're doing it all at once. That's that management, I think. You know, you're running a business and you are trying to succeed. You can't lose more or less half your workforce and expect to bring in however many new people, which is largely less because you're trying to save money, and still perform at the same level or make yourself better. I think that's a big ask.
Well, let's look at the pre-season. I mean, it's not something that... I mean, all of the games have been visible. I haven't watched them. I've been, and I think others have, been a bit disturbed that there doesn't seem to be a particular pattern of play emerging. And Nigel had 14 games. Probably he didn't expect to get the easy ride he's had from the fans. He got a draw against Celtic, which is no great shakes because I think they lost to Mitterland or something.
Exactly.
I look back on that side that played against Fulham, as I say, 513 days ago, and everybody's hoping that the Villa match will show what our opening team lineup against Blackpool will be. But interestingly, that game against Fulham, of the 11 that started that day, six, despite all the changes that we've been talking about, six are pretty certain, I think, not my first choice 11, but pretty certain to be in the lineup against Blackpool. And those names: Jay De Silva, Thomas Callas, Baker, O'Dowda, Wyman, and Wells. And the only other players that are still at the club, he started the game, Masengo, and Casey Palmer. So despite all those changes, you look at those eight players, well, six of them look definite. That's quite a surprising number, I think, don't you?
Yeah, and Bentley as well. Would he be in on that one?
No, Nicky Mempar played against Fulham. Because I think Bench was having a bit of a wobbly time, which caused, I think, Brentford to let him go. I mean, you know, I've got a few friends who are Brentford fans. He said he was great, and then he lost confidence. But, I mean, he's been one of our better players, without a doubt, although I think he made a bit of a hash of one of the goals we conceded the other day. But let's look at the squad. I mean, have you any idea what you think the best lineup is, or the format? Is it 3-5-2? Is it 4-2-3-1? I mean,
I think he might end up playing 4-2-3-1, but you know, does that mean that Chris Martin's got to play up top on his own, and are we relying on him to play 40 odd games? Because at the moment we don't have, you don't really want Naki playing as a proper number nine, do you? Or do you play? I mean, there is versatility there. I think there are. But I'd far prefer you to have a way of playing that they will know about rather than having options to adapt to, you know, opposition or whatever.
Well, if you look at individual, let's look at, because they played two games this week, one at Exeter and one at Plymouth, and they won both. And I put up on OTIB, would Team B, which is the Plymouth team, be 100% certain to beat Team A? And if you look at Team A, I'll just run through it. Max O'Leary in goal. I think he's not a bad goalkeeper. He's not, I don't recall matches where he's flat. They had a back four at Exeter of Danny Simpson, Thomas Callas, Taylor Moore, Cameron Pring. That compares with the one at Plymouth of Zach Viner, Baker, who's left-footed, as is Atkinson, and Atkinson, De Silva. Not a lot to choose between those two back fours, is there really?
No, not bad. And I think, you know, we will be working on a back four being more solid at the back. That has been our problem. And I think that will definitely be the way forward for us.
And if we work together, rather than speculate, and we can a little bit, if we work on a 4-2-3-1, so do you think it would be Callas and Baker as your first choice pairing, bearing in mind that Atkinson's left-sided? You know, we got a lot of left-sided players in defence because, as I say, we got Pring, you've got Towler. He's let the lad Nurse go to Shrewsbury, although he's a fullback. But do you think Callas and Baker would be your ideal pairing? And then that's leaving out one of the players, 1.6 million transfer, that's probably one of the biggest transfers in this division from the non-parachute clubs.
I think, look, you know that you're not going to get a full season out of Baker. I mean, it's as simple as that. And I think if you can get Atkinson in early and get him playing, I think that's your ideal partnership. I think that's what he wants, because you know that you can't rely on Bates to be there for 46, maybe not even 16 games of the season, unfortunately. Bates is great. Before he came, I spoke to Tim Sherwood about him, because he had him at Villa, and he said, "Look, he's a really good defender, but he's brittle. You know, he breaks down, and that's exactly what's been the case."
But re-signing him on clearly a lower wage, do you think that was a good move anyway?
I think he gets bonuses when he plays. I think that's probably the way to do it, because he's not a bad defender. You've just got to. You know, that might actually be pretty shrewd, that you're saving yourself some money, but you've still got a decent centre-half there.
Yeah. I mean, Jada Silva, again, his career at Bristol City has been blighted by injury. Yeah. Little bit lacking in height. But you would say, without a doubt, he's going to be a first-choice left-back if it's going to
I think so. We're sometimes vulnerable at the back post, aren't we? With a diagonal, when he's defending that back post, we are a little bit vulnerable because he is small. But he needs a run, because there is no doubt of his technical ability. He's certainly his prowess going forward. I think we've missed that. We need a bit of punch from fullback, and I think he can offer that. And he needs a run of game. So I like Jay, and I think he's a very decent footballer, and we haven't seen the best of him yet.
Yeah. Very quickly to finish on the back four, Danny Simpson or Zach Viner? Or do you think it's good to have a player like Simpson on the bench? I mean, I feel Zach's always got a lapse of concentration in him, and he can play in the middle as well, but... You know.
Yeah, I mean, I like him. I think he's a solid footballer, and the fact that he's been able to play in the centre of midfield, which he did at times last year, I think I like him a lot. And I know some people say, "Oh, he gives the ball away," but I just think he's got that footballing ability that we might need.
Yeah, if you look at the midfield, I mean, this has been, as we often say, certain fans, and I'm quite a few years older than you, we haven't had a midfielder since Jerry Gow left. Interestingly, that his grandson is playing for Bournemouth at the moment, so it'd be good to get him back. And maybe you're, as I say, you are younger than me, you might say, haven't had a midfielder since Gary Shelton left. But we seem to be overpopulated with midfielders now. Again, if you look at the Exeter team, Backinson, Nash, Alex Scott, and I'll talk about him separately later, Joe Williams, if he's fit, it's like having a new player. That's a four there. And then if you look at the team at Plymouth, Palmer, James, King, and Callum O'Dowda, you know, what your two anchors, I guess, your two anchors could be, if they're fit, you could have Matty James and Joe Williams, and your creativity. Well, I mean, where does that? What would your midfield be? You know, if you looked at what's available, and it's a four.
Yeah, I would love to have Liam Walsh there, because I wanted to see him play. I think he's a really technical footballer, and I wanted him alongside Joe Williams. But let's go back to what we got. Yes, I think that spine needs. Securing, and that's what Nigel has done, and that's why he's brought in Matty James, and I think that does give us some solidity. But I think Adam Nagy proved in the Euros what a decent player he is, and I like him. He works really hard. I think our problem is playing forward. That was our issue. Too easy to play sideways and backwards, and I like the fact that Tyreek play just gets his head up and looks forward.
Yeah.
His trouble is he gives the ball away too much at the moment. Yeah. He knows that. But I love the way he just picks up the ball and he's looking forward and he's just trying to get things going.
And he's bulked up a bit. I don't know whether you've seen him on any of the pre-match, but
absolutely.
You know, he's got a physicality that's there, hasn't he?
I think he's a player, and I can see why I liked him, on why he played so many games last season. But because he's got that positive aspect. But I think Nigel will be cautious this season. I think definitely it'll be, protecting. It'll be very much the Gareth Southgate of let's not concede.
God help us. You talk about players giving the ball away and what have you. Casey Palmer, the nearly man at every club he's been to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, he's been running around a lot. And Callum O'Dowda, you know, five crosses in a season's good for him. I'm being harsh. He seems as though he's got one of those wing spots in the bag, though. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I'm just not convinced that Callum is going to give us enough of what we need. I think he's, you know, he's a decent footballer, but I think if we're progressing, unfortunately, I think we need more coming. We need more productivity, and I don't think we've had that. He's been with us for quite a long time. I think he's had plenty of opportunities, but I'm not convinced that he is the answer to giving us those options. Where I think Casey is a better footballer. Frustrating, yes, gives the ball away in wrong places, but can play a pass like nobody else in the club can. Yeah. And I think that's the frustration for every manager, and you know, everyone sees that.
One player that, again, we haven't seen him in many minutes, and the phrase goes, if you're good enough, you're old enough, Alex Scott. I mean, he came on, whenever I've seen him, he's only 17, and he plays like a player who's in his early, you know, he's got a confidence.
Oh, yeah? He wants the ball, and he's happy to receive the ball, turn, look, bring players in. I think, yes, a lot of ability there.
It's a precocious talent, and that doesn't fit well with... Do you think he'll be a cameo player? Because what we don't want... Look how many players over the last 4 years we were stocking up all these youngsters. You know, Freddie Hines, classic example. You know, it's four seasons ago now that he scored against Watford in that famous Caribou Cup sequence. I think Scott's got to stay around this season, even if it's getting the odd half hour. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he gave us something that was pretty interesting. Yeah, and look, I think it's great we nurture our talent and we try and include them. We included probably too many last year, but that was because we needed to. But we've always found, and I think every club has this difficulty of finding the balance of when you're bringing in your academy players and how long you bring them in for before taking them out again and putting someone else in, and what's the reason for them coming in? Are they worth it? Are they just filling in because there are so many injuries? And then, you know, I think we've done quite well with some players, sending them out on loan, bringing them back as better players. And, you know, when they're young, what all the coaches will tell you, you know, that you can be great 17, 18, and then you don't progress as much as people anticipate, and therefore you don't get that much better. So the trajectory is not always up. You can, you know, stall in your career, and therefore they don't become the player that everyone expects them to have been when they were watching them at 17. And you can't tell that with some players.
No. And talking about young players with promise, I mean, it's 2 years now. He's not featured in hardly any of the games. I think he's allegedly he's injured. But Hanoa Masengo, 46 games. He's not turned 20 yet. No goals, no assists, not featuring because of injury. But, you know, where does he fit in? And he cost us a fair old sum, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And look, I think this is a difficult one, because when Nigel came in, he sort of wanted to play him, and he buzzed around that midfield. And I think he changed him a bit. Rather than sort of running around like a headless chicken, he gave him more direction. And I think he understands. He's a better player than he was 2 years ago when he arrived. I still like him. I'm not worried about no assists. I'm not worried about no goals, because I don't think he's that sort of a player. I think he's he is that messer. He's that dynamo in midfield. But again, he might be more happy playing a small sideways ball to Joe Williams or whoever, Tyreek, rather than turning, looking and going forward. But there is still something there that needs nurturing. And I wouldn't want to see him go. It may be we sacrifice Adam Nagy to go, because there may not be a place for him, because we've got so many in that congested midfield as we're talking about, and we may get a bit of money for him. And that would be a shame, because I think, you know, he's a decent player and he's given a lot for the club.
Well, he did, as you say, he did well. So let's move on to the problem area to sort of almost finish. Up front, Team A, it was Mickey Bell's son alongside Naki. And then down at Plymouth, it was Andy Vyman alongside Chris Martin. Semenyo has, I guess, to be included in that lot, although you could argue he's a wide player. But other than Naki, it's difficult to see where the goals are going to come from. I mean, Naki could be good. He's 31 now. Andreas Vyman coming back after an ACL. Pace was always his thing. I'd be disappointed if we lined up with Wyman, Martin and Wells playing in that left-sided role that he's so ineffectual in. I mean, you know, do we do 4-2-3? No, we've done three. We're working on 4-4-2.
I think you'll be disappointed, Potts. I think Naki might end up on that left-hand side.
So he offers, but that doesn't offer anything from a crossing point of view. If you end up with Vyman and Wells on the wings and Chris Martin in the middle, you've not really got crossers of the ball or anything like that. And Chris Martin, you know, who's a lookalike for that Hugo in Love Island, I saw somebody say.
I'm not watching that.
You've not watched it. No. It happens to be on and I occasionally do.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And Chris Martin's looked bit sluggish. You know, he's not going to get you 15 goals a season from centre forward at this stage of his career.
He hasn't got the pace, but he is a presence. And look, we saw him, you know, he doesn't need much room on the edge of the box to be able to put one in, as we saw last year. But if he's not getting service in the air, you know, he's not going to run beyond too many defenders, is he? He wants crosses to attack. So that's why I think we still need a striker. We need an out-and-out nine, but, you know, the world over needs a nine. You know, everyone wants a striker who can score some goals. So, you know, are we looking within the club to try and get one of those?
Well, that player's Louis Britton, isn't it, who scored the goal that cost my other half, Mel, about 200 quid in a prediction league, you know, because... You know, when that went in, that was 200 quid gone down the drain, just getting that consolation. But he's that bustling centre forward, isn't he?
Well, the first thing he did was knock someone out, more or less. You know, he had a challenge and took him out. And I thought, hello, welcome, good lad. You know, so, you know, that bit of presence, look, I haven't seen enough of him to say, you know, he's the answer to it. But you know, we need someone like that, you know, that we can play around. But you're asking, again, a lot of money to find that. Whether, you know, we've been in France, haven't we? We've been in Ligue 2 in France, picking up, you know, your fans.
Jonathan Codgers
and found some decent strikers who can score goals. They may not be, you know, the absolute answer, but they're decent players. So we all need one of those, but I think you might be disappointed come the beginning of the season, the first game. I think you might see Naki out on the left-hand side.
And I think in most City fans would be disappointed from that perspective, because, you know, he's not a guy to play with a smile on his face, but he certainly hasn't had it here that many on that many occasions. So, I mean, look, we've got a squad. You know, if you look at some of the other youngsters on the fringes, Sekou Janna, he's featured well. Riley Towler, I think he's had a bit of a knock. I think the youngsters up front, Bell, Pearson and Conway, I think, to me, Conway is probably the one that's slightly ahead of the other two. He scored that goal away at Millwall in one of the rare victories that Nigel got. I mean, get back to off the field. Paul Simpson, sadly, is being treated for his cancer, but we've been out and signed as a replacement coach, whose name's totally escaped me now, the ex-Middlesbrough, Curtis Fleming.
Yeah.
He's come and joined the coaching staff. But I read today that Aston Villa, following John Terry's departure, are sniffing around after Keith Downing. Yeah, so I think Nigel's got the team around him. Do you think that anything above 12th this year with this squad and no likelihood of raising money worthy of the name, do you think anything above 12th will be a success for this season? Or what are your
I'd be happy with that. I think we'll have good spells, we'll have bad spells. But yeah, I think upper mid-table, it would be a huge achievement. I think, you know, we've got a good enough squad. There is no way we should be in a battle down at the bottom. We got that. I mean, that would be poor. And I would, you know, success this year, I think, would be a yes above 12 and Nigel still in his role as manager. And then I'd be happy. By which time he'll have one more transfer window, that horrible January transfer window. And then we'll 12 months time, we'll be talking, looking ahead and thinking, right, how, you know, are our youngsters good enough to start coming in? Or can we start just pensioning off some of the old boys and replacing them with some decent signings?
Yeah.
I like the fact we've got a bit more experience in there. So it'll help them going through the middle. But, you know, clearly we need a bit of stardust if we're going to even think about playoffs.
Yeah, and maybe that stardust is within if somebody like Alex Scott does break through and show what he can do. And finally, Angus, thanks ever so much for your time today. I've got to just wind the clock back, well, it's nearly 3 weeks ago now, the Euros. Lost opportunity on the day, maybe overall the best team won the competition, but lost opportunity on the day, the way it was managed.
Yeah, totally. I don't think you can criticise Gareth because he got through to a final. Was he slow to react? Maybe a little on field. He was a little bit slow to react to Roberto Mancini's substitutions and then couldn't get a hold of the game. My big question would always be, you know, do you want a teenager taking your fifth penalty? But even going back before then, I think the crucial penalty was Marcus Rashford's. If he'd scored, we're ahead with two penalties to go. And that changes the mindset for a Jadon Sancho and Bukayo Saka. So that changes.
But we were lucky to get that chance when their guy missed, weren't we? Because he's got 100% record. So we had,
you know, Jorginho. I mean, that's a brilliant save. So you're back in the game. But then for a teenager to do it, no criticism of him whatsoever. I don't think whatever you've seen in practice at St. George's Park, he takes a great penalty. I don't think, you know, can you really put it on the shoulders of a 19-year-old who's had barely one season playing senior football with the nation on it? And I think, no, someone else has to, you know, be that person to finish off.
There we go. Angus, thanks a lot for that. Here we go. Just stop the recording.